That's interesting. No, and it's interesting. I like to talk to interesting people around campus, and I think a lot of folks, most people, do not have those experiences of at least being able to leave the country or being away from a long period of time. And you know, people say that when you go away and you come back, you have a very different outlook on the United States, and you think of it differently, good or bad. You have a different view than you would before.
Yes, very true. Very true. I actually had more culture shock coming back than going, I believe.
Interesting. Wow. Tim Keel, Hope, Fear, and Science. Where is the fear? And you talk about this in your TIDE talks, that the fear is legitimate.
Yes.
Because you mentioned in particular, and we'll focus a little bit here in the next few minutes on nuclear energy, for example. The fear is legitimate that a nuclear meltdown is probably not a good thing for most people. But you make the point that that's probably not a rational fear.
Yes. Well, particularly, I tried to make the point that it's not the technology we have to fear. And the technology's out there. It's never going back in the bottle with the genie. These things are only dangerous insofar as we have poor policies governing them. The most important thing is the technologies themselves are not dangerous. I would happily live next to a nuclear reactor. But when we have governments that are afraid to fix or replace old reactors because no one wants to hear about building more nuclear reactors, stuff like that, that's when it starts to get dangerous.
A lot of people feel that nuclear energy is sort of a thing of the past and maybe we should move on to something else. You think a different way of it, though.
Well, yes, particularly because I don't see all about green energy, renewable energy. It's not happening fast enough in my determination. We're going to need a stopgap measure at some point coming up soon. And I believe that nuclear fission, possibly fusion, depending on how that's going, is a brilliant way to do that. And yes, it is certainly more dangerous than solar energy, obviously, but it's got huge power output. Very weak output on green energies, so you have to have a lot of them, and we just don't have the infrastructure or policy to get there very soon.
Interesting. President Bill Clinton wrote an article a couple years ago, and what he was advocating for, and it's an interesting idea, and I want to get your take on it, is that sort of investment. You're saying how it's going to need so much more in terms of the green sector. His idea was, let's go and, you know, let's create a core of people who literally go from house to house and paint the roofs white. And what that will do is you employ people, and then it also lowers energy costs because it's not costing less to cool or warm people's houses as well. I mean, that is something that doesn't seem like that's going to happen in the United States nowadays, though.
No, I don't really think so. I don't think so. And even if we were to do that, the change that would create would just be minute compared to what we need to happen if we're going to be on green energy before the oil runs out. And it's maybe Germany. Germany might stand a good shot, but definitely not America.
That's interesting, though, because Germany is obviously the world's leader in green energy, it seems to be.
By far.
But they really don't have any natural reason why that's the case. Their country's in the middle of Europe. It's not particularly sunny there. It's not particularly windy there. They just happen to be putting the investment in. The United States, you would think anyway, would be able to stand, you know, on top of the rest of the world because we've got the natural resources.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have absolutely no idea why that is. I have often wondered, and I should talk to some German friends because I'm completely puzzled on that score.
Tim Keel's with us here. We appreciate him joining us here on Capstone News Now Extra, an online exclusive. I don't know. That sounds pretty cool. So.
Oh, yeah. Very, very Harriet the Spy.
That's right. That's very true. You're from Salt Lake City, I guess, although you're a person of the world, it seems. How are you liking the University of Alabama? This is your fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you've liked it somewhat.
Yes,
because you've stayed
stuck.
You're right. So what do you think about the campus and the environment and scientific thought and on campus?
Well, I mean, it's a gorgeous campus, and I'm very lucky to have gone here instead of LSU, which was an option.
Oh, boy.
Because the funding just fell out the bottom there.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that corn dogs and science don't really mix, but I'm not sure if that's the case. I'm sorry, Tim.
Oh, yes. Well, let's see. Science at the University of Alabama. Of course, we have a stellar engineering department. Half because we really want one and half because Auburn has one. And our more minor sciences, biology, physics, etc., we tend to get rather underfunded, shortchanged, but we can usually get what we need at this university, at least to an extent. So it might be in an ancient building, but we can get the bits and pieces we need.
What about the people in these programs?
Well, actually, we have, in many ways, we have a very stellar physics department here because we're very interlinked with worldwide physics research programs. almost every professor is working with someone on, in Antarctica or Switzerland or Japan or France on these giant projects. So getting good research here is very is not that hard at all compared to other universities I've been to.
In our closing seconds here with you, Tim, I want to change to a different topic here. Mm-hmm. And it's genetics. You mentioned this in your TIDE Talks, another thing that people are afraid of. And I guess you didn't really mention in terms of human genetic modification and how that may eventually down the road affect mm-hmm. people, but more in terms of food modification and how that can actually help people directly. A lot of folks think that's a horrible thing, that why are we modifying food? But you think that it can actually cure famine or get pretty close to it.
Yes, it could, or at least it can take a giant chunk out of it. So one particular... you want me to talk about on that score?
Well, you know, I just found it interesting because so many people do have fears, mm-hmm. but they don't even realize that they're already consuming it.
Yes.
Right.
About 90% of all Americans, I believe, are consuming, have eaten today something genetically modified.
We're at university, a bunch of young people. I think a generalization would be that we have a pretty positive view of the future.
Mm-hmm.
But you seem to have an even more positive view of the future. Why is that?
Honestly, it's because I believe it's because I understand the technologies pretty thoroughly. I'm the guy that subscribes to Scientific American, and I don't go to Wikipedia so much when I'm not working. I go to science Reddits and things like that. And I think it's because if you really stop and take a measure of all the things we're going to be able to do in the very near future, you're going to get excited. It's not possible not to be. A little afraid, yes, but... the more you know, the less afraid you get, I think.
Very good. A parting quote there for Tim Keel. What are you going to be doing in 5 years?
5 years? I'm probably going to be working on PhD or research, getting myself established on that score before I try to do policy type things.
And in 20 years, what can we expect from Tim Keel?
Well, I hope to be on Mars by then.
Very good. Tim Keel, he gave a TIDE talk the other day. Hope, Fear, and Science. He's a senior from... Salt Lake City, a.k.a. the world, I guess. Physics and mathematics major. Tim Keel, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.